Right.
Well,
Ross is Andy tonight.
I thought he was going to try and show up on his phone tonight, but he's not here. So I'll just get started since he has asked me, since he had a bad internet connection last night, he asked me to facilitate. So I will do that. So what the facilitator normally does, I mean, Andrew has sort of a different format, but what I'd like to do is I have a topic that I'd like to go through, and I'd like to go through the topic I have like an outline of things I'd like to talk about, and then I have some references that we can look at in the book to back up my rhetoric, and then I'd like to get people's feedback, and I think that's especially important because one of my teachers, as Timothy and I were talking about, Adya Shape, he said that if you're talking about God or love, you're bound to sound like an idiot. So, and then he proceeds to launch into a talk about God and love. That's what I'm going to attempt to do. So
a complete idiot.
Sound like an idiot, y'all can correct me because it ain't really talkable aboutable because we're trying to use the body, which the ego created, to do it. And we're using symbols of symbols twice removed from reality. Right. So it's virtually impossible to get it right. The Course does it with poetry. And what I like to say is pointers. So in other words, Jesus will point us in the direction that he wants us to go. But he says right up front, this is not about explaining the meaning of love. It's about removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. So... Mm-hmm. I guess another thing that just came up for me that I ought to quote, but I'm just going to paraphrase, is where it says that I am only here to be truly helpful. He who sent me will guide me. He who sent me will tell me what to say and what to do. I am content to be wherever he sends me. So that's a paraphrase of that paragraph, but that's my intent tonight. So hopefully I can keep my ego out of the way and just share some information and get some good feedback. So with all that said, what I'd like to talk about tonight is the levels of teaching in A Course in Miracles. Okay? It's always been kind of a fascinating thing for me, so hopefully it is for you too. So I'd like to get through the top levels, go to some references, and then get feedback. So, to lay some groundwork for this, my understanding, and in the discussion part, y'all can tell me I'm full of it, but he uses a ladder metaphor, and I have a couple of references in the text to back that up. So we'll use that as the groundwork. It's a ladder metaphor, okay? And I'm saying that, in chapter 28, when I get to the references, we'll chat about how we are on the first rungs of that ladder. So the first rung I want to talk about is the highest rung and then descend down to some lower rungs. So I'm going to go in that order. So the highest rung, my opinion, which I'll reference later in lesson 169, is we say God is, and then we cease to speak. That is the level of oneness joining one, okay? So that's what I see as the highest level. And then the next rung, as I see it, the next rung of teaching, this is all belief, because right now we're going to drop down into the level of illusion, because the only truth is God is oneness joining with one. So keep that in mind. And that's what I always keep in mind when I'm studying the Course. If I ever get confused, go back to oneness joining one. That's the truth. Everything else is part of the illusion or part of Jesus, the Holy Spirit's teaching technique to get to where we believe we are. Okay?
So Ross, did you say oneness what?
Oneness joining one. How do you want to say it? One. Jesus was a terrible carpenter because he could only measure one. And he flunked his math class because he'd go, one and one is one, and one and one, one. And that's all he knew, one. So there's my joke. That's what you're supposed to do when you're giving a talk. Start with a joke, end with a joke, and keep the middle short.
Okay. So one, it's oneness. It's oneness. Again, the phrase is?
Oneness joining one.
Oneness joining one. Okay.
Yeah. Because if you're one and you're joining God and there's only one, what's left to really talk about? God is, and then we cease to speak. You'll see when we get to that lesson how he explains that, because, okay, you know, obviously I'm going to babble on if I try to talk about it. But well, I'll go with what Jesus has to say.
I just briefly, one of the sources I like to study for spirituality is Taoism. And in the I Ching, there's a line that goes, the one became two, and then the two became the 10,000 things, which all needed names. And that's a description of the essential mistake of departing from non-dualism into dualism. So all you need to do is go from one to two, and then suddenly you've got 10,000.
Yeah.
And there's somewhere in the course where it says, the miracle is your ability to try to memorize all the insane things that you believe make up the world and how the world works. That's the, you know, don't complain about learning the course and saying it's hard. You know, look at what you've done already with the one that goes to two and the two to the 10,000. You know, drop that stuff and just focus on what's in front of you in the lessons in the text.
Okay. So, let's go ahead and open it up to things like that. But I just want to get through. I want to get through the rungs as I see it, which I'm willing to be corrected or bring in Taoism or any of that. But I want to get through the rungs as I see it and then cite some of the references that I've looked up. And then we'll discuss it, and you can add in what I always say is I like to agree with and add to whatever the speaker is saying. So that's always my kind of my philosophy. I'm not saying you're disagreeing, but I try not to disagree with people because that seems like attack to me. So I don't want to try. I try not to do that anyway. So we go from God is, and then the next rung is God and Christ. So in other words, if we look at our lessons in the 200s where we go through, I am not a body, I am free, I am still as God created me, we get to, well, that is the Christ. That's what God created. But to me, that's the first level of separation. Okay? So that's, now we have God and Christ giving the appearance of some separation. Okay? So the next rung down is, and again, this is levels of teaching in the course as I see it. So, in the next rung down, we have Holy Spirit and Jesus, who are the voice for God. And I think about those two as synonymous, Holy Spirit and Jesus. Jesus wrote the book, let's say. The Holy Spirit is God's voice. So there we have that. And I don't really have a reference for that one. So then the next rung down is brothers. So now we have these brothers that we believe we see. So we see the face of Christ in our brothers. And I have a reference for that, and we'll kind of look at that in a moment. But that I see, okay, now we're seeing these separated brothers. But if we're seeing with vision, or if we're seeing the real world, we see the face of Christ in all those brothers. Okay. So then the next level down is brothers having the same interests of ours. In other words, what I see his teaching there is that our brothers are looking for happiness the same as we are. And I know Andrew's used the example of brothers who, it happened to me, they ripped off my house. So, okay, that brother was looking for happiness by ripping off my house, which of course I need to forgive and forget that it ever happened and only remember the loving thoughts and know that that brother, if I see him as separate, is only looking for happiness the same as me, and then bringing up the level. And if I do meet that brother, see the face of Christ in that brother. So that's kind of how that works. And that's really as low as I wanted to go on the ladder of enlightenment, let's say. Because after that, Jesus goes into all kinds of different complications that only he or the Holy Spirit are really qualified to unsnarl that yarn ball of complication that we make with our special relationships and this and that and the other thing that we think happens to us that really doesn't. So that's what I had on the levels. And so what I'd like to do now is just kind of briefly go through the references that I looked up, which are, I think, pretty short and sweet and to the point, and pretty juicy. So is everybody okay with that? We'll just go through the references for what I found, and
sure, then, yeah, Ross.
Then we'll open it up to people just lambasting me and telling me how wrong I am. Because then maybe I'll learn something.
Ross, you're good. I'm just, would you cite the, not the page number, but just the, you know, the, are you going to the text and what?
Okay, got it. Yeah.
Thank you.
I will do my, you can help me with that because I am going to look at the blue book.
I haven't gotten mine. I ordered it. I haven't gotten it.
Okay. So the highest rung, we're going to go to lesson 169, okay, in the workbook. So you can do that, right, Don?
Yes, I can. I'm on my way there right now.
Okay.
And I'm there. 323.
Yeah.
Okay.
And where is it? Paragraph 5. Okay. So it's paragraph 5. So what I'll do, if the screen stays the same, I'll just go around the screen and have people read, if that's okay. And Timothy, you would be up for paragraph 5, lesson 169.
Very good. Here it comes. Oneness is simply the idea God is. And in his being, he encompasses all things. No mind holds anything but him. We say, God is. And then we cease to speak. For in that knowledge, words are meaningless. There are no lips to speak them, no part of the mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. It has united with its source. And like its source itself, it merely is.
Okay, we can't let that one go. I just have to talk about that one. OMG, is that like the ultimate statement of one or what? I mean, there's no lips to speak them, no part of the mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. So when you get to that point, how can you have any problems? Your problems go away because you say, well, who would there be to have a problem with? What time would I use to have the problem? Where would that problem be? There is no time. There is no space. There are no other beings. Absolutely not. It's only God and me as part of God. I mean, wow. That one really hits me. So, and look at that. It's in lesson 169. It's not in 300 or something. It's right in the middle. He just slams us with the big tamale right there. So, wow. Anybody else want to comment on that one? No? Okay, well.
It's a stunning declaration of non-duality.
Isn't it? Yeah, wow.
And it's it portrays a mind with no conflict.
With no what?
No conflict. No conflict.
Yeah.
The mind is not conflicted because it's can't even recognize anything distinct from.
Right.
There's no distinction.
But what does it has united with its source mean?
Where is that?
It's the next sentence. It's the second to the last sentence. It says, part of the mind sufficiently distinct to feel that it is now aware of something not itself. It has united with its source. Well, what's the source?
Well,
it's God, right?
The word we use is God or love, the creator. So
that says that it's united after it's been separated.
Okay. Well, you said after. So when
it's never separate. We perceive it as separate.
Yeah. We are resting comfortably in the arms of God right now, to use a metaphor. So God, here's my metaphor, okay? So I'm sitting in God's lap right now. He's got his arms around me and I'm dreaming, right? And God's like, I don't know what's wrong with this guy. He's twitching around and he's thinking he's having this dream. I don't know, maybe he's chasing rabbits in the woods or something. I don't know what he's doing, but he's right here with me. He's always been here with me.
Right. So
what is his problem? That's right. Kind of what God's thinking. But it's really this oneness where there's nothing separate. You are God. God is you. You are in God's mind. God is in your mind. God is love. There's nothing else but love.
Now,
it's really hard not to sound like an idiot or like I'm talking about unicorns or rainbows. But those are the pointers that Jesus uses to point at this is the meaning of love. There is nothing else. There is God. God is, cease to speak. There are no lips. There are no words. It's
okay,
just
God. But what I'm saying is in these last two lines, I see two things. And if I were, I haven't gotten to this lesson. I'm way, way back in the lessons. I've never gone through the lessons before. Okay. If I come across something like this in the lessons, I just go by it. You know what I mean? I don't let it trouble me. And what I'm saying that what I see is it has united with its source, which means it's over here, and then it's uniting with something else. And like its source itself, it merely is. So is that? Who's that?
Because of levels of teaching. That's the whole topic of my talk tonight. Jesus comes to us at the level we believe we are. If we believe we're not in God's loving arms, that we're out in this world dealing with traffic, he'll come down and Jesus will sit next to us in our car and say, hey, man, how's it going? You think you're in a car, huh? All right, let's talk about cars. Hey, see that guy over there? Forgive him. Because he didn't just cut you off. You just thought he did.
Right, right.
You know, he just comes down to your level.
Yes, thank you for that clarification.
But here he's saying, God is, and then we cease to speak. We're taking you up the ladder. You're on the Willy Wonka Wonkavator, and he's pushed that top button. You just blasted through the glass ceiling of the Willy Wonka chocolate factory. And you're up in heaven right now when you read this paragraph. And he's saying, well, I know you're not there. I will gladly come down and sit in your car and tell you about the guy to forgive next to you.
I'm in my car.
I will go down to that level with you, even though we both know that's not true. There never was a car. You've always been in heaven. You never needed to get on the elevator. God is. That's it. But the thing is, God is, it's just not very helpful for all of us who think we're in our car driving around getting cut off in traffic. It's not very helpful. It's like, yeah, God is. What about that guy that just cut me off? Yeah, I know God is, but the guy who cut me off.
Well, you can get it, but you can't sustain it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's my experience, is that I can understand it. I can even feel it. I just can't sustain it.
Well, I think it's more like you can accept it and you can own it. You can't really understand it. Because here's my other metaphor. We're like fish in a fishbowl, okay? And Jesus is outside the fishbowl going, hey, man, want to ride this bicycle? And we're like, what? I got fins, man. I can't breathe out there. What are you offering me this bicycle for? And he's saying, yeah, but you're not really a fish. You're spirit. And you can ride the bicycle. And we're like, no, man, no, I got to stay in this tank because, you know, I need this water and I'd swim around with these fins.
Well, I accept that I can't wrap my mind around what's being discussed. I can't wrap my mind around it, and it's okay.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
Accept it and own it. Trying to understand it with your brain and your ego and your body, the tools that the ego gave you.
Right.
Wow. The ego designed your body and your brain and your senses as separation devices, strictly to keep you separate. Everything it does is to keep you separate. And so breaking out of that is really, really hard without help. That's why you need Jesus to come and sit beside you in your car and go, hey, man, forgive that guy. He never did it. Sure, Don.
So you introduced, I was going to ask about ego, but you hadn't mentioned it yet. So ego and spirit are both in the mind.
Yeah, they're all, if we go back, I mean, the confusion lies when you start utilizing words, you know.
Yeah, I know. But when something
God is the truth, ego is a level of the dream. Ego is the construct that miscreated the body.
Okay,
so the body
to bring it into your story about the guy, you're in the car and the guy cuts you off. Okay, so he cuts you off, and then there's the awareness where you can choose for the ego. In other words, the ego can just react and. We can identify
with the mob, pull out a gun,
react, do whatever we do, even if it's just in our mind. But this, we can say, we can notice that we're not at peace.
Yeah.
And then we can say, you know, well, help me to see this differently, or whatever language. You can basically invite spirit to kind of influence and then bring back peace.
You know, my metaphor was, bring Jesus in the car and have him tell you what to do.
If I notice I'm unhappy,
okay, good.
If I notice I'm unhappy or emotional about something, I know that I am making a thought mistake. I must be using the ego, because that sort of experience internally is never of God. And so that red flag, with practice, shows I recognize it, I catch it, I don't make it bad or try to attack it. I just turn inside and I say, Holy Spirit or God or Jesus, whatever you want to use, I need some help correcting this set of thoughts. They must be in error because they're leading to an unpleasant consequence. And then you say, I don't know, and you turn it over, and you get the voice or the message, or somehow that information gets to you through a channel that you're comfortable with, and you go, oh, I have an option not to get angry and flip that guy the bird that just pulled in front of me and stopped. I can just go, boy, that's somebody who thinks they're in a huge hurry and what they're doing is important, and you know what, in the bigger picture.
Yeah, there is that phrase, you know, they're either giving love or seeking love, right? So yeah. In this case,
it's a high level.
It's a level or a call for love. Right.
It's a call for love.
Yeah, that's a high level on the ladder. You can also reference is Ken Wapnick's teachings. If you go to YouTube and do a quick search on Ken Wapnick, he has the decision maker. So he puts a blue dot on his chart and he says, this is where you have the choice. You can either choose the ego or the Holy Spirit, the decision maker. You have a decision maker inside your head that can choose. Which one do you want? And after you've chosen the ego enough times and found out the results suck, you'll probably start choosing the Holy Spirit and figure out that that doesn't suck. That actually is peaceful. And you can choose peace instead of this, which is one of our lessons. I choose peace instead of this. So those Thank are you. Tools.
I and think
the one that Timothy was talking about goes, I must have chosen wrongly because I'm not at peace. I made the decision myself, so I can choose otherwise. I want to choose otherwise because I want to be at peace. The consequences of my wrong choice will be erased because Jesus will erase them. I messed that quote up, but it's on page 90 if you're interested in that. I have it in my phone as a tool. And then it goes, Jesus will remove all the consequences of my wrong decision. I choose to let him choose God for me. So it's on page 90 if you want the exact quote. I kind of mangled it a little bit, but you get the
gist. I'm interested in that. I don't have the book. So
maybe someone can look it up and give you the reference. But anyway, let's get unless there's anything else on that topic, I wanted to go down to the next rung in the ladder, which is going to be page 431, and I'll get you the 431 in the workbook.
What's the?
What is the Christ, Don?
It's lesson number what?
Just after lesson 270 is what is the Christ? Okay. So, and then again, that's following back to my second rung in the ladder, where we have not only God is, which, as I said, isn't very helpful. Now we get to go with Christ. So we have God and Christ, giving the appearance of some separation. But if we look at the first paragraph, it's page 431, and for Don, it's what is the Christ, paragraph 1.
Got it.
And I have Jacqueline as the next one to read. Go ahead, if you could read paragraph 1, Jacqueline, if you are there.
Okay. What is the Christ? Christ is God's Son as he created him. He is the self we share, uniting us with one another and with God as well. He is the thought which still abides within the mind, that is his source. He has not left his holy home, nor lost the innocence in which he was created. He abides unchanged forever in the mind of God.
So, Barbara, that kind of goes back to what your question was, doesn't it? Yeah, you're nodding. So I think, yeah, it kind of says, and then it goes back to what I was saying when we get to the lessons in the 200s, I am not a body. I am free, for I am still as God created me. So look at the first sentence. Christ is God's Son as he created him. So if you're not a body and you're free and you are as God created you, doesn't that mean you're the Christ? So any comments on that? Because I think that's it kind of talks about it as Christ and God in that second level of teaching, but not really. He's always going to go back to it's only God. You're united with God. Don't worry about it. There's nothing else. But he'll slip it in subtly right in the middle of a very low-level teaching. So it's pretty fascinating how he does that in the same paragraph over and over and over. He'll throw in that. Yeah, okay, we're talking about your special relationship with your special friend that you hate and, you know, some of the lessons. But let's talk about how you're actually one with him. And whatever you give him, you're going to receive because you're actually giving it to yourself. As Angie likes to say, there's that circle. There's nothing else. It's all in your mind. So if you're attacking a brother, you're attacking yourself. If you're giving love to your brother, you're giving love to yourself. That's the way it works. So you're only seemingly, go ahead, Timothy, knock it out of the park.
Riffing on your very last sentence, there's a phrase I've learned that goes, I will believe I am going to experience those things that I believe I have done to others. So that's a little complicated, but I will experience, or at least I'll think, you know, I'll have the perception of the experience that whatever I think I've done to somebody else, I don't actually have to have done it, I just have to believe I've done it. Whatever I think I believe I've done to somebody else is the experience that will then come to visit me at some point in the future.
Sounds kind of like karma, but
it does.
I'm trying to get the gist of what you're talking about. If it's all one, then you're only...
Then right, so it's the circle.
Yourself.
Cause and effect, right. So it's in my own head. If I hurt Ross, or I try to hurt Ross, I say something mean or demeaning, then... and then I get off the call. What I will encounter at some point is somebody who does that behavior in return to me.
That sounds a lot like karma.
And does that fit into Course in Miracles, or would you exclude it?
No, I wouldn't say it does really, you know, not to make you wrong, but it's just that Course in Miracles talks about that there's only you. So if you think there's another that's going to retaliate on you, then you're kind of missing the mark, because it's only you thinking you're attacking, and you're only thinking, you're only believing that you're attacking yourself, because there's only you in the equation. There's
right.
One.
So the ignorance part of what I said was believing that there is someone else that I can attack at all in the first place. That's a misunderstanding?
Well, no, I think what you said is that somebody else, some other third party, is going to come out of the blue and attack you.
Well, no, another character in my play, in my internal drama, in my internal movie. You know,
I think that's going outside the realm of the course.
Okay.
Because the course wants, just my understanding is, I think the course wants us to see that there's only me believing that I send out an attack bot, but it's only going to come back to me because there's only me in the equation.
Gotcha.
The only thing that's in the dream are these imaginary characters in my mind. So when I attack my own mind, what could be the result? I'm attacking my own mind. There's no third party that's going to come and blindside me and attack me.
Well, because it's only your own mind, that's why I take the trouble to say what you believe you're doing, what you perceive is happening.
You can believe in all kinds of weird things.
Right, but that's all in your mind. By the way, don't worry about offending me by saying, no, this doesn't fit or it's wrong.
Yeah.
This is the only kind of group I ever get into where I get to ask these high-level questions and get a decent answer. You know, that feels satisfying. So
I have opinions more than answers. So, I mean, I want to stick to the course if I want to spout out answers.
Yeah, I really appreciate, you know,
we got fingers. Let's see, who was first, Jacqueline?
Hey.
I think Jacqueline we'll go to Don.
Okay. As I feel like I'm, you know, how I am understanding it, is that anything that's happening out there, any person who's saying, doing, that I see is coming, is from my own mind. It's from my own, it's, they talk about the subconscious guilt. But that person, I mean, there isn't even anybody there to forgive. I need to forgive where I'm coming from in my mind. And so it changed forgiveness for me. I felt like I was learning to do forgiveness, but it took it to another level. So it's something in me created that person to cut me off or be rude or put me down or be kind to me even. You know, it could be the kindness too. That's me. So when I forgive, I receive forgiveness because I'm forgiving that aspect of my mind. And they say there's nobody out there, which is hard. I mean, on my, as a person here in this world, I'm not saying I can 100% believe that or experience that, but I feel like that is the truth somehow. You know, I believe that's the truth. And I'm hoping to be able to really understand it's my own mind out there expressing that needs to be healed. That's where the forgiveness is coming in, where salvation will come.
What you project is what you perceive, and it comes from the inner state of your mind.
Well, and there's nobody there. No, I mean, if somebody cuts me off, nobody's cut me off.
Yeah, you believe there is.
That's what's so amazing about it. So there's,
yeah, the inner state of your mind projected out what you want to see, and then you perceive it back with the tools that the ego gave, the body, the senses, and the brain.
That's excuse me. I think what she's talking about is the shadow figures that we create, that we project our thoughts onto in situations when we have attack thoughts. So we're actually attacking ourselves, not in the other shadow figures. I think that's, I believe that's what Andrew uses as an explanation for that. So
great, yeah. I mean, and then everybody has like a little bit different way of understanding things. So we could be saying the same things, but we may not just be using the same words because they're symbols of symbols twice removed from reality. And, you know, we might be sharing the same ideas, but using words that, those words don't quite connect with how I understand it. And then, maybe later on you might go, I understand what he was saying. Or maybe I say, I understand what she was saying. She is just using different words to say the same thing. A lot of times that can be it. Because really, if we go back to the highest level, to end any confusion, God is, and then we cease to speak. But again, not very helpful. We need to get down lower level of the rungs of the ladder so that we can get some benefit out of these teachings. For me, anyway, I can't just open the book to 169 and go, God is, done. All right, there we go. That's all I need. No, I need a lot more help than that. I'm way down on the rungs of the ladder.
Didn't
Dawn have
a hand up? I'm sorry. Yes,
you're up. Barbara. Did you have your hand up like a while ago, Dawn?
I did, yeah.
go to Barbara.
Okay, I need a little guidance through the swamp here.
Yeah.
So, Timothy, you were talking about, you said something about, if you believe you did something, then at some point you will be visited by, that'll come back on you at some point in the future. Is that what you said?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Now, sometime in the last, as I've been studying course, I recall a time in my life, like 40 years ago or so, when I was, got involved with a woman who was married and just kind of like a fling, kind of one day night fling. at some time after that, and then her, apparently her husband found out all of that stuff. At some time after that, this woman wasn't very much part of my life, so I didn't even, anyway, I heard that her husband took his life. And in my mind, I felt like I might have contributed to the unhappiness of him, his unhappiness, and disrupted their life. So that whole thing is troubling me. How does the Course respond? How might I respond to that in keeping with the miracles?
Forgiveness.
Forgiving
yourself, the perceived event, the imagined harm that you inflicted upon others. So the difficulty is, in part, we have only a partial view of what the big picture is, of what the reality is, of what heaven's plans for you and these other people might have been. But you're able to forgive because you shed an ignorant idea, which is there are other people, other places, other things apart from me, just like I'm apart from God. No, you're one with God. You can't throw that away even if you try, and we have tried. And so the harm I imagine, you know, the suicide, the crushed feelings, the shattered, you know, all that stuff, you are relieved of that. And so you really, with the understanding that that doesn't have an intrinsic reality, it doesn't exist for real from its own side the way your oneness with God does exist and always will, unchanged.
Yeah.
That you begin to understand, oh, that's the naked truth. The naked truth is I am one with God, and his will for me is perfect happiness. And hey, I could deal with this for a long time if I had to, right? And you will. And then the forgiveness part is the miracle of letting go all the negative feelings and emotions and imaginings that you just described, because you understand that in reality, it never happened.
I was going to add that, Timothy. It's the undoing of the projected, the idea. It's the undoing of it, like you just said.
And the Holy Spirit does the undoing.
And I was going to add that the basis of the ego's thought system is sin, guilt, and fear.
Right.
So if you feel you've sinned in the past, then you can feel guilty in the present, and you can fear in the future.
You're going to get punished.
But it really, that sin, guilt, and fear has to do ultimately with the sin that we believe we committed in separating from God, the guilt that we feel over doing that, and the fear that God is going to punish us for our sin, for breaking with him. So that's the origin of sin, guilt, and fear, which is repeated over and over and over in the world in unending, complicated, different forms, which is way, to me, it's way down on the rungs of the ladder. It's where the Course spends chapter after chapter after chapter helping us to undo the ego, because that's the basis of the ego's thought system, is that sin, guilt, and fear.
And can I just...
Thank you.
Barbara had her hand up way back when, but it sounds like you have a point on this point.
Yeah, I do have a point on this point, or not really, because I don't understand. I don't get... I'm not very clear on a lot, because I'm not... fluidity in this book is just not there. But I got really hung up on the function of time. And it seems to me like your example, which I really appreciate your bringing something that painful into this evening, mm-hmm. because to me, that's what this group is all about for me. It's like, how do I deal with this hard, hard stuff? But the book talks about the past bridging over to the future, and the past, if we stay in the past, then we're making sure that the future is the same, and we're jumping over the holy instant, which is the present. And, you know, the past is not part of the present, you know. And so this is where I need you all to help me out, because I'm not even sure I really grasped that myself. But when I read that part, and it's somewhere in the beginning, about the function of time and how, you know, what we mostly do is spend our time in the past. And as we spend our time in the past, we're making sure that the future is the same.
We try.
Yeah.
We're afraid of the future.
Yeah. And that, so it's the holy instant is really important.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That's just what came to me. And
yeah, well, that's, to me, that's the basis of forgiveness. If you're forgiving the past, you don't, and I just heard it again today about selectively forgetting. So it's not up to you to select, because you'll do it wrong. But if you turn it over to the Holy Spirit, he will only save your loving thoughts, your loving and kind thoughts. That's it. That's all that there is going to be. All the rest of the past is just basically forgiven and forgotten. Okay? That now stay in the holy instant, which is now. It's always now. Every holy instant is now. Everyone that you, I'm just going to say, mess up because you're blaming yourself for something. You're dreading, oh, geez, I did this terrible thing. Now you've just messed up the present because you're dwelling on something you did in the past that never really happened.
Exactly.
But if you can keep stringing those holy instants together where you go, oh, everything's really okay right now. Oh, wait, everything's really okay right now. Wait, everything's really okay right now. I'm actually at peace right now. And just string them together. That's the trick. Not easy, but that's what I see as the task. You string together those holy instants and you start to feel peace.
Holy and it's instant, a constant holy. Letting go. It's a constant, you know.
Bye, Micheline. Thanks for joining us.
Hopefully it isn't constant forever, but you just, when those things come up, you have to let go and know that you're in the past and the past didn't even happen.
Yes. You're on the right track. Yes.
Just
now and forever, string together every holy instant because you are eternal. So it's going to take forever in time to do that.
Right.
Until there is no time. But yeah. It's,
you know, there is no time because time changes, and that's one of the hallmarks of things that don't really exist from their own side. If nothing, it changes, it's
nothing real can be threatened. Nothing
can be threatened, right? And all the rest. So time is like taffy. You can stretch it. You can compress it. It operates at different speeds in different places for different things. That's physics. That's not, you know. Any philosophical system. In one of my past lives, I was an astronomer, so I had to do a lot of physics. And time is malleable. You know, it's an illusion.
Can I make the point that I was going to make that wasn't related to Don's thing? Or is my time up? All I wanted to say is, to me, it's like, how do we use this as the rubber hits the road, you know, of things like what you were just talking about, Don? And, you know, when I first started back on this time, and I hadn't picked it up in many years, I thought, I'm going to go through these lessons one day at a time, and at the end of the year, I'm going to be good. And then you keep running in. I keep running into people like Andrew and many of you who've been studying it for years and years and years and years. And I have come to the point of saying, and so will I, you know, because it's a practice in itself. It
What else are you going to do? Go back and suffer?
Yeah, you have to practice. You can't read it and then get it and then go on with your, fully integrating this life. So I read it every day, and there's something in the part that I'm reading that helps me get through that day. And yeah. I mean, like today, it was a discussion of faith and faithlessness. And it's all basically the same idea, but like you were saying, Ross, different. It's spoken of with different words. And, so right now, the part I'm reading is about faith and faithlessness and staying in that holy instant. I can't explain it, but what I'm saying is that for me, there has to be a daily practice part of this, or it just evaporates.
Yeah.
And I still do. I sit with a Buddhist group on Tuesday nights. I've spent a lot of time in Buddhist practice, which I still find valuable. But this is the one that's making it happen. The other one is a slower route. And this is more painful and it actually requires more of me than the Buddhist practice does. And it's what I said many weeks ago when I said it treats you like an adult. You know, it's like you have to do the work. And reading it every day, sometimes it's kind and comforting, and sometimes it's not so kind and comforting, but it's got your best interest in mind and your peace in mind. And
there's the word. So that brings me to page 90. So
okay.
That's the one I have in my phone in case I forget the exact wording, but it pops up into my head every time that I am not at peace, and I'll just read it.
What page?
Page 90 in the text.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah.
For Don, it's chapter 5.
Oh, right. Yeah.
It's at the very end of chapter 5.
Got it.
Yeah. So, I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself, but I can also decide otherwise. I want to decide otherwise because I want to be at peace. I do not feel guilty because the Holy Spirit will undo all the consequences of my wrong decision if I let him. I choose to let him by allowing him to decide for God for me. So that's one of my tools. Anytime I get upset, is I refer to that paragraph and go, okay, I'm not at peace. I decided wrongly. Let's fix that right now. And then, if you can go from there and forgive whatever's happening, that's even better.
I like that sharing of tools. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And I want to, I'm in chapter 5. Is it under the decision for God?
The very end of the chapter, right?
The very last, paragraph in italics.
Okay. Just a second.
At the very end, just before chapter 6.
I must have decided wrongly because I am not at peace. I made the decision myself. That
yep,
one?
That's it.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so I actually have that in my phone, so I can pull it up anytime.
Okay.
I forget the exact wording, but I have the gist of it in my memory, so I just start saying that to myself because I know I'm off in the deep end with the ego doing something idiotic. So, all right. So anyway, if there's nothing else on what that rung we were on, the next rung that I see, we were at the rung with Christ and God, okay? So the next rung is did I already talk about Holy Spirit and Jesus, the voice for God? Because that's the next rung.
No, I don't think so.
Okay. So that's the next
rung. What chapter is that?
I'm not going to use a reference to that because, OMG, that's like the whole book. Jesus wrote the book. The Holy Spirit is on practically every stinking page. If you don't get that that's part of the rungs of the ladder. Did you really open the book? Because you missed something there. There's so many references to that. Pick one.
Okay.
I mean, I think everyone believes me that that's a rung of the ladder. But you see how I'm going down the level of separation? God is one. That's one. Then we've got Christ and God. Then we've got Christ, God, the Holy Spirit, and Jesus. Holy, you know, for crying out loud, we're up to four now. Four illusionary, illusory beings. So the next rung is we're going to talk about brothers. The one I came up with today is, so I forgive my brother for what she did not do. That way I'm leaving no one out. So for that, we're going to go to text chapter 20, section 5, paragraph 4, if I can get to it. My torn up book.
Page 435 in our book.
430 what?
435, I think.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. Chapter.
That start your brother's body?
4.
Yes.
Wait. Paragraph 4.
Oh, 4. Oh, yes, 4. Paragraph 4. How can you estimate?
So, how can you estimate?
Let's see. Yeah, let's see. Where were we at? Barbara, I have you up next for paragraph 4. Are you there?
I was muted. Okay, ready?
Yeah.
How can you estimate the worth of him who offers peace to you? Let me start that over again. How can you estimate the worth of him who offers peace to you? What would you want except his offering? His worth has been established by his Father, and you will recognize it as you receive his Father's gift through him. What is in him will shine so brightly in your grateful vision that you will merely love him and be glad. You will not think to judge him, for who would see the face of Christ and yet insist that judgment still has meaning? For this insistence is of those who do not see. Vision or judgment is your choice, but never both of these.
So to me, that says with vision in your brother's face, you'll see the face of Christ. So, and then when you see the face of Christ in him, obviously you're looking out on yourself because there's no one else. So you're seeing the Christ in yourself. So if anyone wants to add to that or say I'm wrong or whatever, that's how I see that. So, you know, you look at your brother, you see the face of Christ. You look in the mirror, you see the face of Christ. You know, jump up the rungs of that ladder. Forget about your brothers. It's all Christ. But if you still want to go and see brothers, really try to see the face of Christ in them if you're at that level of belief. And if you're not, we'll go down one more level tonight. we have plenty of time. We can discuss things and all kinds of stuff. So does anyone have anything on that? That you look out and see your brother and you see the face of Christ? Hopefully. After you forgive him, maybe. Don has something.
Okay, so now this is, okay. So there's a thought, an ego thought that's hidden and underneath in me, that whenever that I go like, how can you estimate the worth of him who offers peace to you? What would you want except his offering? Okay, so there's a thought that undercuts this, that my ego wants to say that is not of God. that this is an evil spirit. I mean, I hate saying this, but this is something that I'm dealing with in my spiritual path now, is the idea that it probably comes from some fundamentalist Christian kind of place. I haven't really practiced fundamentalism, but my family, you know, that was in our lineage, if you will. So it's really important for me to bring this out, almost like I'd say lay it on the altar, you know, because it's so destructive. I mean, it makes it so that all the teachings, as much as I believe them at a certain level and how they're comforting, there's this underneath thing that says, this is evil or something like that. And
what's evil? The
Course in Miracles is evil? Is that what you're saying?
That it comes from an evil place.
Course in Miracles, the whole thing is evil.
That's a fundamentalist belief.
I know. You know, I feel very vulnerable in sharing this.
No, it's totally true.
But I want to share it because I believe that it's not that I'm wrong. You know, that idea is wrong. But it's there, and I want it to go away.
I did read an online thing about somebody who studied A Course in Miracles and then decided that it was all, you know, blasphemy.
That's out there. I haven't read. I really haven't read. But I know it's out there. But that's really, it's not a matter of debate. I'm not bringing it up for debate. I'm bringing it up because I want, just as any other error or mistake, I want it corrected.
Well, in the Holy Spirit, lay it on the altar and say, Holy Spirit, please, you know, and it will unfold, if not in an instant, it'll unfold here and there, and it'll slowly dissolve and be gone.
Okay. Jacqueline, thank you. You're breaking up for me. So I think what you're saying is give it to the Holy Spirit to ask for it to be basically...
See it in another way.
Just give it to the Holy Spirit. Yeah.
But, you know, if you had something specific, you know, because if you think the whole thing is blasphemous, like this lady I read about online, I was like, okay, Course in Miracles isn't for everybody.
And you know, to me, it's like, I don't think that's a bad idea. I think that's a great idea. To give it to the Holy Spirit and it will unfold. But I think you can also ask yourself, you know, since there is no separation, right? Or, you know, the Holy Spirit, the way Andrew put it, is the healed part of our own minds, right? Yeah. So ask yourself, is this helpful? Does it feel evil? The word evil, well, the book uses it occasionally, but, you know, it's such a strong word and it does feel like it's coming from some fundamentalist past. I identify with it. I'm not saying you're fundamentalist past. I'm saying that I think those ideas are out there. And I think you just, you know, for me, I just ask myself, like what you were saying earlier, Timothy, of all the different things that I've explored, this just makes sense. You know, I can't find where this is really anything more than trying to lead you to peace and love. Mm-hmm. And that's not evil.
Good point.
You know, I really didn't bring it up for debate. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to debate. I don't believe that idea, but it's there. It's like, and it kind of just is insidious, you know, and it kind of undercuts me and it makes it so that you were saying earlier, Barbara, that it's hard to sustain.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So this kind of keeps a crack in the foundation of my belief and of my faith. And I, again, I guess if I didn't, if there wasn't some belief in it somewhere in my ego, the problem is that I identify with the ego.
Yeah.
When I identify with the ego, that comes along with that.
And it has nothing to do with separation, and that's what the ego is all about.
Yeah, I realize it. I'm looking for a healing of it. I'm looking for
correction earlier.
Yeah, I'm looking for a divine correction.
Don, let me give you some
specific. Maybe we as a group could address it. But if it's the whole book, you know, then, well.
I don't agree with you. I'm sorry, Ross. Well, I don't agree with you. It can be the whole book.
Huh?
I don't know. It seems important to you to make a distinction between something specific and the whole book. And I'm saying that I'll study these. I'll feel at peace. I'll feel a practice. But even as I said, as this was being read, I heard it. I heard this kind of like, you know, and I want to let that go.
It's doubt.
Doubt.
I have doubt too at times. You know, doubt comes up for me, I think.
Sure.
Sounds like just some doubters, you know.
It's it may just be a process. You know what I mean? That you aren't going to have, it's that unsustainable thing. It's like, you know, you feel yourself moving with it, you know, and it being helpful. And then that comes up about, oh, you know, this is not good. And, you know, you may walk away from it. I mean, the first time I picked up this book, a long, long time ago, I got it from the library. I brought it home. I started reading it, and I said, this is the worst hogwash I have ever laid my eyes on. But I've kept coming back to it with many, many, many years in between because I couldn't believe it. You know, the doubt was there, and then I would get deeper into it. I would get hooked into it. And then I would leave it, you know. And so I've had a relationship with this book for a long time, but I've been in and out of it because of those kinds of doubts. I think it's a very legitimate thing. So,
I'll tell you my experience is I read the whole book. I did all the lessons. And then I thought, well, okay, that didn't work. So I went looking for another spiritual teacher. And I went to Berkeley and I went to Buddha at the Gas Pump. And if you want to look at non-dual spiritual teachers, there's hundreds of them at a website called Buddha at the Gas Pump. And the premise of the website is that you'll be pumping gas and Buddha will be standing next to you and you won't even know it unless you start talking to the guy. And then you'll find out it's the most enlightened person you've ever met. But there's hundreds of these non-dual spiritual teachers on that website. And I went to Berkeley and met dozens of them and listened to their talks and finally came back to A Course in Miracles and decided, I think like Timothy, that this is the most complete path to enlightenment that there is. And it's the quickest path. And if you want all the answers to why you do what you do, ego-based, it's in here. Study the psychotherapy pamphlet and you'll find out why you do all the stupid psychotic things you do. And it's just all in there, every piece of human behavior. If you want a degree in psychology, read this book and you'll have one, basically. So that's what my experience has been. And, you know, I know it's helped me in my peace of mind. It's changed me spiritually. So that's been my experience. That's all I can say.
I appreciate that. And I am trying to say to you, I don't need any more evidence that it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not giving you evidence.
I need a way. I need a way. I want it to go, I want my doubt to go away. And mm-hmm. I don't seem to be able to make it go away. Okay. It's like a virus, you know? And so that's why I was bringing it up. And I think the best thing, the only thing I can imagine is to lay it on the altar to, at a deeper level, a deep spiritual level, you know, for it to just be dissolved, gradually dissolve. And I felt like bringing it up amongst fellow Course in Miracles practitioners would be a good way to testify, you know, like put it on the altar, so to speak, and have us join in spirit, you know, be joined in spirit about its insubstantialness, you know, and how it can dissolve, so I can not just visit peace and visit really actually joy and bliss, but live there and sleep there, because it's really invaded my sleep, this issue. Timothy, I feel as if you wanted to say something.
I just wanted to tell you that I think that you are in a marvelous place, and that you're like a slingshot pulled all the way back, or a bow and arrow, and it's ready to fly, baby. And you're here not by accident having this discussion with us. Mm-hmm. It takes guts and hunger to make real change, to come to some group of strangers, and you're opening up the most inner part of yourself, and you're sharing it with us. Okay, that's somebody who's pretty far down on the path already. And yeah. if you still have doubt, guess what? That's the human condition. And it's not your fault that you have doubt. All of us have it, and it's taking whatever form it's taking in you now. And a particular way to help get rid of it or shed it slowly is when you notice that you're having that negative doubt emotion, you don't wrestle it or try to push it away, because that gives it strength of its own. You just look at it and you go, your doubt, I recognize you. You've been here about 100,000 times, and I'm not going to do anything to you. You don't have anything to worry about me. I'm just going to keep going on, going on. And then you do whatever's next in front of you. Do the dishes, or, you know, return to your workstation or whatever. And it'll come back again, maybe slightly less intense. And you'll go, oh, yeah, you, I know. This is the experience of being a human being named Don, having this core doubt issue. Next, you know, and just and like that. And the more you get it and just see it, recognize it, don't threaten it, say, yeah, you're safe for me, it slows down and eventually goes almost completely away. Maybe real masters have it utterly disappear. So, I've done that myself successfully. I do that myself. It's a great practice, and I've taught it to others or been taught myself, and they report much the same. Maybe it'll work for you, maybe it won't. But it's, if it doesn't, put it up on a shelf and come back, 6 months later.
I appreciate that, and I invited it because I think at some level I got that you had something there for me. And I think the way I would hear it is just, bring light to it. In other words, just being aware of it is the key. Just, okay, I see.
Exactly.
I see you again, or I recognize you, or, okay, and now I'm going to go on. I think that's a healing.
Oh, you understand. You understand.
That's what I did now.
And I don't want you to ignore my first statement about the slingshot or the arrow being ready to fly. There's a saying that, the greatest spiritual realizations tend to rise from the deepest muck. And also celebrate your muck, because it bodes well for your ability to get far fast along this path.
But don't you think thinking that you're going to maybe with this issue, but that you're going to get past it and stay there? In my experience on the spiritual path, I mean, what's coming up in my mind right now is the spiritual path is not for sissies, right?
No, it is not.
You know, it's hard, and it's hard exactly for the reasons why you're talking about. And I have mine every day. I mean, I'm in this divorce. I mean, how do you bring the Course of Miracles into a discussion about what's happening with your appraisals of your property that is being settled in a divorce? And, you know, the appraiser is blowing it and blows it again. And then, you know, and you say, how do I use this in this? And I don't. I just, dissolve into my worst ego self. And then I go limping, you know, home, and my sleep is absolutely disturbed, you know, because I hate being dragged back into my intensive ego self. But I can't negotiate the real world very easily any other way. So it's a struggle. All of it's a struggle. But you get up and you do it again the next day. You know what I mean?
And you try to do it with peace.
Yes, and whatever you begin again. You begin again, and you find the peace, and you stay there as long as you can. And like Timothy said, when it dissolves, you know, it's okay. It's going to do that. You just pick it up and begin again.
Yeah. Forgive yourself and start over.
Yeah.
Say it again, Ross.
Forgive yourself and start over, because now is the only time there is. So if you're dwelling on the past, saying that, oh, geez, you know, I'm a terrible course student. I made a mistake yesterday. No, you didn't. Yesterday, you can forgive that and just start now. Now. Only now. Start now. Have your peace now. Start over now. Right now.
Yeah, I really appreciate you sharing this, Don, because it, you know, brings me closer to my doubts and seeing them and, you know, saying, okay, I'm ready to let, you know, I would like to remove these blocks in me, you know, to the love. So,
I hope I don't sound like
thank
I have
you for
all
sharing
these things. Because, I fall on my face all the time, you know.
That's why you have the thing in your phone. You know what I mean? We need tools to something to touch.
Start over.
Face to touch, you know.
Start over now.
Exactly.
Well, we have about 6 minutes left. And we got through 5 of the 6 levels that I had. The only one I have left is down one more ladder of the rung, which is brothers' interests the same as ours. So, in other words, our brother's happiness, I talked about that earlier, but my brother's happiness, if I believe that there are brothers, I'm down on that level of the ladder, that they're the same as mine, no matter what they're doing. They're looking for happiness the same convoluted, backwards way that I am. You know, my pursuit of happiness in this ego world is wacky and silly, and so is theirs. So
what's the reference?
Looking for happiness.
Is there a reference for that? I'd love to see it.
Reference for that. There is, but you know what? I couldn't find it. Does anyone have that with our last 5 minutes?
I can search here. What would I put in the search?
I put in exactly that, and it came up with nothing. But it is in the course somewhere, and it talks about having our brother's happiness or our brother's interest the same as ours. But
okay.
I could not find it with that search criteria. I would need another way of phrasing it to come up with a reference. But that's as far as I wanted to go down in the levels. Obviously, Jesus talks to us on lower levels than that. He talks a great deal about our special relationships, and those are the ones that we try, with his help, to convert into holy relationships. Not as in terms of the body, because there are no relationships between bodies, but between minds. We're going to have holy relationship between minds. So that's another level down where we're dealing with relationships and seeing our special relationships and trying to muck through those. It's one of our biggest challenges that I see anywhere. That's why, yeah. That's why I guess I've been out of a love relationship with any women for quite a while. I realized it was 4 years that I broke up with my girlfriend, and I'm like, oh, has it been that long? I guess I'm that scared of special love relationships. But I'm making friends and whatnot, so it's just like, those are special enough. Tim, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I was going to go back to the chorus for just a second. I apologize. The second to last piece we read about Heralds of Eternity in that chapter. The idea that came to me much differently tonight was, I look in the mirror and I see me and I go, that's my face. That's one. And then I look over at my brother and I see his face and it's different than mine. And I go, okay, now there's two faces. And I can attack him and he can attack me and whatnot. But there's no unity. And then I get wise, I do my internal homework, and I look in the mirror, and now instead of Tim's face, I see the face of Christ. And then I forgive my brother for anything I imagine he might have possibly done, and now I see the face of Christ over here too. So now I don't have two different faces anymore. I have one. That was just it. That's just the metaphor that came this time with that chapter. Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess in summary, do you all think this was helpful? Like seeing the ladder of the teaching of the Course?
Absolutely.
And then you
go across.
If you get confused, go back to the top rung. God is, and then we cease to speak. Highlight that chapter, you know, lesson 169, that paragraph, because that's the ultimate truth. Everything else is part of the illusion. You know, he's given us little pointers to love. He's saying, yeah, we're going to call you the Christ. You're the Christ. Not really, but we're going to say that. Really, it's God is, but just for helping you out a little bit, we're going to go to Christ. Well, we're going to give you this imaginary voice, Jesus and the Holy Spirit. We're going to give you that, you know, because maybe you think you're at that level. Well, all right, you don't think you're at that level. All right, we're going to give you brothers, but we're going to make you see them as the face of Christ. Okay, you don't think you're at that level. All right, we're going to have you see brothers at the level of they're seeking the same level of happiness. You're not at that level? All right, we'll go down to special relationships.
How many more rungs are there?
You know,
a couple more.
If you dig down into the muck, as Timothy put it, the muck of the ego, OMG, you can start talking about attack thoughts, guilt, sin, fear, and how we repeat those three things, sin, guilt, and fear, over and over and over. The forms differ, but the content is the same. The basis of that sin, guilt, and fear is that we think we separated from God, we feel guilty about it, and we're sure he's going to get us for it. And we project that out, and I know all of you can come up with a dozen different ways that you projected that sin, that perceived sin out, felt guilty about it, I know I can, and then know that you're going to be punished for it. And that's what we do.
Yeah.
So you can go down into that level and just get this knotted up ball of yarn into how it all manifests itself in this illusory world we think we're in. So anyway.
Much appreciated, Ross.
O'clock.
Thank you, Ross.
That was fun for me.
So. Yes.
You did a fine job.
Just yes. Great, and it was a great discussion.
I would say it's in the top few classes I've attended.
Wow. Don't say that, because then I'll get all egotistical and think I did a good job.
Well, we figured you needed the spiritual exercise.
Okay, let me get my thing out and say, I am only here to be truly helpful. Only here to be truly helpful. He who sent me will guide me. He will tell me what to say and what to do. And I am content to be wherever he puts me. So Andrew was the Holy Spirit tonight putting me here so that I could be truly helpful.
I like it.
We'll take the rest of the night off.
Oh, yeah. I think I'll have a beer. I'm on a high high. That was really fun.
Thank you, Ross.
Thank you so much. Okay, and everybody have a great evening. Or the rest of it.
Hey, Don, you did great tonight.
Next week, you're good. Either Thursday or Wednesday.
How did you have Barbara, everybody?
Everybody.
Bye. Good night, Jason.
Good night, Jacqueline.
Good night.
Good night, Jason. Good night. Night, Barbara. Night.